Good morning.
Good evening, wherever you are. So in this podcast, I am joined by one of my oldest friends. Actually, we go way, way back since I was about 14 years old. His name is Jamal, and he's a JDM car enthusiast living in Canada. And he also recently started really trying to work on his own channel, documenting his own car culture journey back in Canada. So he drives a current generation WRX, and he just got his dream car, which is an R32 GTR. So huge congratulations to him. In this podcast, we talk a lot about when we were growing up, my formative years when I was 14 to 16 or 17, and I would spend several times a week at a kung fu school called what was it called again? Kwakwai, that's it. And it was a really, really cool place because it really taught me discipline and the value and importance of martial arts. It's kind of like really the foundation for my fitness journey. So Jamal also was really into Kung Fu, Kwakwai. And it was just a trip down memory lane to talk about some of those old, back in the old day, as you would say, back in the old days. And then we kind of transitioned to talking about cars and JDM culture. A lot of it talking about, you know, my journey here in Japan. And also, I found it fun and interesting for us to relate it to the current vibe and memes that are playing out in Western car culture, with the whole phenomenon of people basically chasing clout for Instagram likes, and just kind of like my, I guess you could say, analysis on this phenomenon, on what is the basis of it, just from a different perspective, because I live here in Japan. And I can just see what's going on around the world while not being directly in it. I do think there is a level of a lack of respect, which is prevalent in Western society these days. Very unfortunate. But as we talk about in the podcast, you know, there is a lot to be learned from experiences that people are having, you know, within cultures around the world, such as, for example, my experience here in Japan and my observations of the car culture here in Japan. So we talk about that a lot, and we also talk about each other's journeys on YouTube. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoy it. I found it really fun and interesting to talk to Jamal, and we'll catch up at the end of the I was about to say video. We'll catch up at the end of the podcast. So see you in a bit.
Hello.
Hey, Albo.
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, perfect. All right, so why don't we start? Can you just give a quick self-introduction to the audience, to folks listening, and then we'll just jump right into it. I don't have too much time, but I thought it'd be good to do like a quick podcast. And I'm sure we could talk for hours, but let's start with a quick self-intro.
All right, cool. Thanks. First of all, I really appreciate you even having me on your show. My name's Jamal. I'm also known as J Clay, and I've basically been into like the JDM car and culture lifestyle since I was like 16, 17, even younger actually, but more or less for cars. My first car was a Nissan 240SX here, which would be a Nissan 180SX in Japan, and that really started it off. I've been into cars all my life. I can't say I've ever stopped, and I just continue loving it every day.
Yeah, you were an early adopter of the JDM lifestyle.
Yeah, actually, you and I met at our martial arts school, and that's where it even started too.
That's right. We go way, way, way back.
Yeah,
20 years. Almost back.
Like, yeah, man, yeah. 20 yeah. years ago, actually. Yeah.
Definitely 20 wow. years.
Can you believe we can say that?
it blows my mind, which kind of is, yeah, it's completely mind blowing. You know, what a journey it's been, eh? I mean, you know, I guess for the backstory, we met at Kwok Kwai Kung Fu in Mississauga.
Yeah.
A little suburb, you know, about 20 kilometers from Toronto. And it was an awesome Shaolin Hungar style Kung Fu. And dude, that place was awesome.
Yeah, I loved it because it not only mixed the, you know, the Chinese culture, but because our Sifu was also part of the Vietnam War, he learned a lot of other styles of martial arts, which he kind of combined with the so that we had a more eclectic kind of viewpoint of using kicks from Taekwondo and other things from like Vietnamese martial arts and Kung Fu, right?
And he had some crazy stories.
Oh, yeah. That's an understatement. but it made me that much more appreciative to have him as a teacher for even the short period of time we had him.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of sad. You know, I think because of COVID, the school has shut down, like at least for now.
Yeah.
Kind of felt like a bit of a end of an era, you know?
It did, to be perfectly honest with you, Albo, like, because, yeah, he moved to the school in Brampton, which is not too far, about 15 kilometers north of Mississauga here in Ontario.
Yep.
And, yeah, it just recently closed on the onset of COVID. And I actually used to pass by that plaza sometimes to go shopping there because it was a small Chinese plaza and certain things you can get in there. And yep. You wouldn't believe that there's still pictures of you and me and Kathy and Dean, his son and daughter, like in the studio.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, wow.
We really were a part of our own history, you know?
Yeah. I mean, those were some of my really formative years, I think, like for all of us, kind of the first place where I really learned the value of discipline through the martial arts.
And hands down.
Yeah.
I always admire you and Tim and Hugh because you guys always would stay back after school practicing tricking and all that stuff. And I'm like, man, I really wish I could do those things.
You should have just stayed.
I mean, I tried once with you guys, but man, just the altitude you guys could get on some of those tricks, I was just like, man, that must have taken a lot of work.
No, it was I mean, it was a lot of crashing, a lot of practice, and a lot of hanging out on grassy fields, and also we would go to gymnastics gyms where we could use the plyometric floor to get like a little bit more air.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, because really the height is not really like leg muscle or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like we had practice in like safer places like plyometric flooring in the gyms.
Yeah,
and there you get like a ton of height, but also when you crash, it's not that hard. It's kind of soft.
And so the rebound.
Right. Yeah. There's a bit of rebound, but also like a bounce. So it's just soft.
Oh, okay. So you feel a little bit more confident when you're doing those moves after you've practiced on there.
Definitely. And then, you know, like the grass, like we would always look for like good grass, like really good grass was like the most sought after type of environment, because, you know, you could be out in the sun and then like do flips on the grass. And even if you crash, it doesn't hurt that much. But good grass was really hard to come by in Mississauga. There's like weeds everywhere. Like, you know, like the tough grass.
Still are.
Yeah, still is. Yeah, it sucked. Like the best is like a golf course. If you could find like a golf course type of grass or like a baseball field, like that was the
well
best.
Taken care of.
Right, right. But even baseball field grass sometimes would be too slippery. So you would just slide and like crash. So that's why, you know, like the the kung fu mats were really good because you could do some stuff and you could crash and it didn't hurt that much. And you know, we had practice on some other types of flooring, so had a little bit of confidence with those skills to like really send it. And I think that's why we could really utilize that space. So I don't know, man. I have so many memories of that spot. The original one, or not the original one. I don't know if it was the original one, but the one in
that's the original one. Yeah, that was the one that we met at is the original one. Unfortunately, that one was turned into. Actually, I was trying to show you when I was on your Instagram live a couple weeks ago. They changed it into an Italian restaurant.
Oh wow! Okay. Wow. So, how times change.
Well, because you know our Sifu, he was trying to bounce back and forth between both studios, and he didn't have enough teachers there, right? So that's why he had to kind of consolidate in just the one in the Brampton, and it was closer to home because he lived in Brampton, and then he commuting to Mississauga, and then going to Brampton. Just a lot for him.
Yes, the Brampton school, the floor was too hard. That's why I didn't like it. Like,
it wasn't carpet. It was tile.
Yeah, it was just tile, and then we would practice like barefoot. And yeah. I don't know. I guess I'm just too soft-footed, but you know, I prefer a little bit more softer cushion on the floor. The carpet. But do you still do martial arts these days?
Well, unfortunately not. Like I do practice here at my house sometimes. Just like different movements and stuff, like kicks and punches and stuff, but unfortunately, because of life, and then for a short period of time, I exited the JDM car world and I entered the JDM motorcycle world. And I was riding a Gixxer 750. About 2 years ago, and unfortunately, I had an accident with a SUV.
Yeah.
So, just a word of advice to anybody, if you choose to get a motorcycle, I wouldn't recommend riding it in highly dense populated areas. The chances are it's just too high.
Yeah, there's don't about motorcycles. It's like there's two types of people who have had an accident and people who will have an accident.
Yep. That's definitely I definitely learned that the hard way. So, yeah, unfortunately, I had a bad break on my main pivoting foot, my dominant foot. So yeah. I'm trying to get the strength back, but it takes a lot because it actually is a pretty bad break. So,
oh man, that sucks. So it must make it hard to do like some of those old kung fu movements and
oh yeah, skills like, and stuff. Like even just standing, like, you know how, I think one of the things that he told us to do just to get our balance up on one foot is to like stand on one foot and like kind of cross your legs and put your socks on every morning instead of like sitting down. Yeah. So I always used to do that. And like now, oh man, it's very difficult, like almost impossible. I usually fall back. So yeah, it happens. But on the other end, as it's, I guess, a silver lining to it, if you can look at it that way, is that I was able to kind of makeshift some money from that, which enabled me to kind of purchase two of the cars that I really wanted.
Yeah. And you are, I mean, you got those two cars in a span of like 6 months, like really quick.
I know. I reconnected with you and literally got those cars. I was asking you for advice the entire time.
Right.
So yeah, my WRX and the now owner of a 32 GTR 1993.
Congrats, by the way. That's awesome.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. Like honestly, you every video that you've made is honestly truly inspirational. I don't know if it really comes through as much as through text, but I being completely honest, like every time I see you watching, doing anything at Daikoku Futo or even just showing Japanese culture in general, it just kind of inspired me to still kind of push forward. Cause I did go on a bit of a hiatus with, you know, my car culture and my Japanese culture intake. But really watching your videos, it really inspired me, man. And I even remember when you actually even started out back in like 2010, because I was even looking at our messages on Facebook. And I'm like, yep. Man, it's been that long. And he held strong. And like, that deserves a lot of credit, man. I hope you realize that.
Thank you, dude. I mean, it's been a hell of a ride. I think, you know, the hardest part, like, I wouldn't even call it hard, because it was just stuff that, like, I already enjoyed doing. And I guess I'm kind of naturally, I like an audience. I guess I'm kind of narcissistic in that way. You know, like, I wanted to document, like, what I was doing in Japan. Because there was this blog that I used to follow. It was called Gaijin Smash.
Mm-hmm.
And it was with this black dude named Az. And he was living somewhere in Japan and doing this exact same thing that I did, which was he was an English teacher on the JET program. And, you know, when I was researching about the program, which is the program that I did for 5 years, you know, I completely fell in love with both, like, what he was talking about, but also, like, the creative expression that I saw that he was able to do through his blog. You know, it was such amazing storytelling. But it was also amazing just because the subject matter was so interesting. So that's kind of how I felt, how I have felt, like, this entire time that I've been in Japan, where, like, the story kind of just writes itself. And for me to not document it is almost like, it's in Japanese, you would say motainai, which means it's a bit of a waste. So I always felt like, you know, here I am, and I still don't know how. I mean, I thank my lucky stars every day that I was able to pass that interview process, because it's like 17% chance, basically cumulative chance, that you're going to get in. It's like extremely competitive. And not only are there like a very limited number of slots, there's like a total of like maybe like 70 slots or something that go from Toronto every year. And hundreds of people apply for it, right? Hundreds and thousands. And then there's like a two-step process where you have to pass the first stage. So then you can get an interview. And then once you get the interview, you still have to pass that interview, and like more than half the people who got to that stage got cut. So
really,
yeah, somehow I managed to make it through the ringer. And it was just a series of like just really, really fortunate circumstances that enabled me to get placed, not just in Japan, but like where Initial D takes place.
Yeah, you sure.
For folks who might not be too familiar or not know the detailed backstory, like, Gunma Prefecture is this area of Japan, which is about 2 hours north of Tokyo. And there's an anime called Initial D, which growing up, I really loved. And it's, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure you know, but that anime about street racing on the toge, it actually takes place in real life, in a specific spot in real life. And that's where I was placed. So I just happened to have like the insane fortune of like being placed to live there. And yeah, at the time, I didn't even know that it was a real thing. I think it was kind of my fault in a way that people kind of started to realize that this place existed. And street drifting actually happened there. So that was crazy.
But at the same time, I don't think it was mainly a fault. I think it was more of I may sound a little bit, little profound, but just it brought that global connection to that culture alive. I think you just gave credit where credit was due, because I like you used to watch your blogs. I used to watch mine. I had several ones. I still have them, the option video collector's edition. And I had this other one called, I can't remember what it's exactly called. It was like a drifting underground video where this girl was actually taking videos of like that area in Daikokuputo where you showed that drifting happens. And not many people would know unless they're actually there or unless you're actually immersed in the culture. So by you, you know, documenting these things, you're providing an excellent service to show how there's different niches of Japanese culture that people may not be aware of. And I think that just provides even more credit. You're just supporting, you know, a great part of the culture. And to be perfectly honest with you, I didn't even know like how difficult it was to get into the JET program, because I think I've told you this before, but I'm living vicariously through you, because when I was in university at York University, I took a Japanese culture course, and I took first year Japanese, and I never forget my Japanese professor, Osta Sensei. I was telling him that I wanted to do the JET program, and he's like, I know this might sound a little bad, but I want to go and teach English in Japan. I want to experience the Japanese culture. And he's like, oh, really? He's like, that's great. And I'm like, and he was like, so like enthusiastic about it. I'm like, can I ask why are you so enthusiastic about it? He's like, oh, because Japanese people are really interested in black culture. I was like, oh, okay. So I was just like, and I guess it was the early 2000s, hip hop and stuff was like coming to a full like brim and stuff. So I'm sure younger culture was interested in like the culture of North America and stuff like that. So I was hands down ready to do it. And you know what? As I said, I'm living vicariously through you, because sometimes life doesn't turn out that way. But on the bright side, you know, I still am immersed in Japanese culture. I have all my Hyper Rev books that I'm looking at right now, Initial D DVDs that I have as well. As I said, I watch your videos all the time, and I promote them to all my friends and all the guys here. Anytime I meet a new person with like a JDM car, I'm always saying, check out Albo's videos, watch them. You'll be like immensely impressed.
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. You know, for you, I don't know if you want to share, but like, what were some of the blockers that kept you from applying for and signing up for the JET program, or you know, trying to go through it?
So I guess it was more like culturally and stuff like that, because you always have friends or family members always kind of pushing you in the way of, oh, you know, you need to go for a property, oh, you need to get a better job, and it and then also like things that like your grandparents are saying, oh, you know, you're going to be far away from us, are you sure you want to move away? I'll be honest with you, a lot of people probably go through it. You get that kind of guilt trip where your family's like, why would you want to be so far from your family?
Yeah.
So, but I think there was something that you've said before in one of your videos that it's not just a cliche, but you really do only live once. So why not try to experience as much as you can? And I've really understood that as I've grown older.
I think you only live this life once. Like, I don't, you know, let's get metaphysical for a moment. But you know, I do think that after this journey and this life is over, you know, there's something else out there. But like, this particular, it's kind of like when you play an RPG, like, you know, you play like World of Warcraft or something, or Final Fantasy. You'll never play the exact same game. Like, again, like that playthrough will have been like your playthrough. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense? Like,
yeah. And then you're going to see it through a different eyes, a different story kind of thing. But it's the same, a similar world, but a different story.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I think we really do have to chase our goals and our dreams. And like, they don't have to be like super huge dreams either, but they don't, I think you just shouldn't let your life pass you by without doing things that you want to do. So that's why I'm like super excited for you when you bought your dream car, and now you've even started to document the process of owning it with your own channel and stuff. That's really cool.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I've been slacking a bit, but I definitely have taken footage. I just need to edit it. It's an awesome process. It's just, I just like how you said as well, like you're just trying to find the time to get things, and you're trying to take naps every now and then while you're editing. I'm trying to do the same thing. Like, cause I now have about a 2-hour commute each day from work to back. Cause I live in your old area, an area where I believe your family is, in like Kitchener Waterloo area.
Oh, really? Wow. Nice.
Yeah. I'm in Cambridge. So
Oh, no way. Wow.
Yeah.
Which area of Cambridge?
I literally live in, like, pretty much South Galt, like Franklin and Dundas area.
Oh, wow. Okay, okay. I think that's really close to where I lived, like where my family was living. So I was living, do you know where St. Benedict's, Benny's is?
That's closer to Townline, right?
Yes. So I lived on Townline.
Yeah. Okay. So you're closer to Hespler. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I know exactly where that is because I have to pass it every day.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a nice little quiet, sleepier town than like Brampton or Mississauga, or you know, Scarborough, that area. So you must be like the only guy there with an R32 GTR.
I am, and to be perfectly honest with you, I don't know. I wish I'd know how you deal with it, because I like the popularity a little bit, but at the same time, I like the I'm a kind of a recluse at the same time. I'm a little bit introverted. So when I have so many people coming up to me, it's just like, okay, that's like, I kind of want to tone it down a bit, but it is fun. The funny thing is I was driving the GTR around just to take it for like a nice cruise, and there was an S15 Silvia that passed me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not the only right-hand drive car around here.
Yeah.
But and also a Forester STI. I was actually
No way.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Way.
A lot of I think it's you that has increased the popularity of those things. I've seen a few of them. So people are definitely importing those now.
I think. Yeah, I feel like I can definitely attribute that phenomenon to being my fault.
Yeah, I actually met a guy at a Subaru dealership who, it's funny, I met a guy who at a Subaru dealership has a WRX who works for Nissan, who actually also has a friend that works for Nissan who watches your channel religiously.
Wow. That's crazy. That's hilarious.
So just want to give you some kind of like grasp of and viewpoint of that you are touching Canada very much. So like you're definitely reaching out in your home country, man.
You know, it's crazy. Whenever I go back for the holidays, and I'll just kind of like throw together like this little meetup, you know, hey, if you watch the channel, I'll be here, you know, just come hang out. And then like 50 people show up and I'm just like, it's insane. And then people are like asking me to sign their dashboards and stuff. And I'm like, God, I hope I don't fucking forget how to sign my own name.
That's popularity for you, man. But honestly, it's honestly a good thing, because as you've said, and you've always indicated that you just hope to inspire a good addition to like car culture. And I think you have. And I hope you do keep doing what you're doing, because personally speaking, I don't like I think I showed you a video a little while ago of this other type of culture that's coming in the car culture that I'm not a big fan of, where they're trying to do like stunts in the middle of like Yonge Street or Yonge and Dundas Square downtown.
Yeah.
It is not anything that we want as a representative of how we enjoy cars.
Yeah. It's like the how can we like unpack that? I think what I love about Japanese car culture, right, is the fact that it has so much like history and lineage, and there are like there's acceptable behavior that has become coded into that particular like style. And even for example, something like Bosozoku, which is like those guys in the bikes that go crazy, right? So, you know, from the perspective of like, if you know nothing about them, right? Like, let's say you're just a normal Japanese person, you might be like kind of annoyed at them, of course, right? But then it's also interesting because they will just like cruise down the streets, just making a ton of noise with their motorcycles. And it's kind of like accepted as part of the fabric of Japanese society. And so that was something that really intrigued me like for a very long time, even like drifting. Like, why is it that people who like do like even street drifting, like, why don't the police just completely clamp down on it, like, really hard and just crush it? And kind of like the reason that I think the reason is because this is a culture that's been handed down from generation to generation for like 40 years. And within each of those generations, you have like senpai and kohai, you know, that's like the senior and junior relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in the societies like the Bosozoku, like the Bosozoku subculture, right, with the motorcycles, and like those subcultures often then are kind of an entryway into like the Yakuza, like into like organized crime,
mm-hmm.
which is another like really fascinating topic, but it's all tied together. And the point is that even in those societies, which seem to be like all about like, you know, flying in the face of the law, flying in the face of Japanese. Outlaws. Yeah, exactly. Kind of like outlaws and shying away from the typical Japanese really button-up culture.
Mm-hmm.
If you look into that culture, it's actually extremely hierarchical. So there's like very, very, very strict like seniority that has to be followed and respected. So like the juniors will respect what the seniors say, and the seniors also uphold the what was kind of like left to them from their seniors. So like there's like certain ways of like speaking to each other, and then there's also like limits of behavior, like this is like too much, like this is like if one of like the young guys like steps out of line, then like it's the responsibility of the older guys to like put him in his place, to enforce the hierarchy and the rules so that the culture can like coexist. And to bring that back, I feel missing in our, because I'm from Canada, right? Like our Western culture, which it seems like this generation of like who, like the guys who hoon on like the streets and stuff, like they're not like that didn't come from something else, really. If anything, it came from like from watching maybe like street drifting in Japan and mm-hmm. trying to copy it. But it's like it doesn't have like the same history and lineage to it. And no. It's and there's like a lot of the big difference another big difference I find with the Japanese culture is like there is respect built into all layers of it. So like you have to respect the higher, the what's called the level on top of you. It's like as a matter of fact. And like you have to respect like your seniors and people who are like older than you, and also people who are not within your inner circle. And even within your inner circle, you have to be respected by people under you, and you have to respect people above you. So mm-hmm. like that is like the foundation of Japanese culture, and to not express that like respect, it's like it's not just like disrespect for the person, but it's almost like shame for your family for not having raised you right. So it's like you don't just shame yourself, you shame your whole family and your friends. So mm-hmm. because of that kind of dynamic, people are very, very, very conscious about you know how they get perceived within their social groups. And I think that's what keeps things in check almost. Like that's why you don't have like the attitude that I see in like to your point in Western culture with people like Kuni and like Dundas and Young and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's just disrespect. Like they just don't give a fuck. Right?
No, they don't. And that's exactly what you said was I was fully on that frequency that I've always been fascinated. And that's why I've always held Japanese culture, even just East Asian culture, so high, because that respect intertwined in every aspect of pretty much anything is just so it's so like satiated as like a foundation. And that is something that we don't have. Like, as you said, just so clearly, like you put shame to your family and your friends and everything like that if you act a certain way, and that's just not acceptable. Here, the kid that did the donuts with the around the flames with its 350, he lost his license, lost his car, and was on house arrest, and then goes on social media just for the likes to say that, oh, he got his parents' car, his parents didn't really care, he's out, he's driving without a license. That kind of stuff you don't see happen there. And that's that is exactly intrinsically what is missing, that level of respect.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. This concept of like clout, like it's a weird phenomenon. Like, what is it really? What is clout? Like, you know, I mean, could you explain it? Like, I know what it, I have this conception of it, but
I think it's from my understanding. Obviously, everyone's gonna have a different perspective, but from my understanding, it's this this drive to appease to this kind of this drive of anarchy to say that you're going against the grain, but it's just for the fascination of others to accept you for that kind of rebel. But it's not really keeping you on a status of respect. It's just like for a certain high for a moment. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's not anything to, like, you're putting your, like, for example, I think that you doing your documentaries, you're putting a substantial stamp in culture and bringing some sort of education to people. Some it brings something that you can actually use vitally in life, or just in a candid conversation you're having with somebody. Doing these stunts or doing anything for the clout or for the likes on IG, this is literally just for a moment in time that will not be really remembered, because people really won't remember it other than as a joke or something not to take seriously, right?
Yeah,
that's how I would describe it.
I think it's I think originally, like, the etymology of the word, I think actually comes from like hip hop culture, right? Where like rappers would try to get clout. I think that's where it's kind of like from.
Entertainment culture for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think somehow that kind of spread over to just like internet culture, just because, you know, entertainment is social media these days.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like this fame chasing mentality for how can I say, like, it's one of those words that doesn't really mean anything, or it means a slightly different thing to each person. But I think to me, it's kind of like what you said, like getting online popularity for no particular positive purpose. Like, that's kind of like the insinuation of clout for me. You know, it's like, why are you trying to become popular? It's like, there's no positivity. There doesn't seem to be like some sort of like positive connotation to the word, right?
No.
So just as I think people kind of like inherently understand, it's like, what does it matter how many likes your picture gets? It's really stupid, like, in a sense. Like, you know, I can understand if you have like a business and that is a metric that can be used to make decisions for your business or something, right? But if it's like you're growing like your online following it's like, you know what it is? I think more and more it's kind of like an unfortunate byproduct of like the social media age, which is that I think more and more, as people live so much of their lives around social media, you know, like, we tend to start to value people based on like the number that we see on their social media. So it's like when you see somebody who has like an insane number of, you know, Instagram followers, it's like, whoa, that guy is somebody. Or
yeah,
if they have like a big YouTube channel, it's like, wow, that person is somebody. I think that's what it is. Like, but it doesn't even necessarily mean that like they did anything like worthwhile or of any particular merit, you know? And then I think with cars and stuff, that's where it gets really, really like it can get ugly, because oftentimes within the world of like cars, like not just JDM, but like other, you know, sub niches and whatever, just with cars in general, oftentimes people will have like their social media account. They don't post pictures of like of themselves and stuff, right? They don't post pictures of like their thoughts. It's like you flex. Even this word, this is such a silly word, like the word flex, right? It's like the idea of gaining popularity like through your car, and then that's kind of like the metric that people use to judge each other, right? So like if you're into cars, and then it's like, oh, if you see this person has like, I don't know, like 10,000 followers on like Instagram or something, right, for their car, then like that's what it's based on, you know? But it's not even necessarily, it's not based on like how that person thinks or how much positive impact like that person is having. And I do think like part of the reason is because it is quite difficult to, you know, as they say, like blow up on social media.
Well, it has to be entertaining, yeah, right? And most people find, as I said, the most entertaining things that are unfortunately more of a kind of a fad, a passing trend. Like as you just even mentioned, the word flex. When we were in high school, and you're only a year younger than me, so when we were in high school, that wasn't a word that was used on a regular basis. I remember back in the day, the word dry used to be used as a way to kind of denote somebody.
Yeah,
it's just a passing trend, but it's becoming more globally used because, yes, we have social media, internet's more available to everyone around the world. So things are becoming more, I don't know, more widespread. Like I to even the point where I hear people using that cheese thing. I didn't even know that was a thing for a bit. I've gotten to that age where I'm thinking like, everyone kind of is just going on that passing trend. And that's the clout, right? As you said, it's, a lot of it's from hip-hop culture, rap videos and stuff like that, especially nowadays. And it's transitioned to cars. I don't particularly like it because I don't know how it is. Well, I can only tell based on your videos in Japan of like in terms of police enforcement, but it's getting heavier here. Even in this area where I'm at, which I'm in like the boonies. I'm in the Gunma of Ontario.
Yeah.
So like it's actually crazy the fact that like police officers are now like even going on Twitter or Facebook posting videos like, oh, we don't mind you having cars, don't modify them, and we don't want to hear them. That kind of stuff. It never used to happen. It's kind of ruining the enjoyment of just, you know, modifying a car, personalizing a car, making it your own. I think we need to, as you say, be more than just a car. Make that a part of your culture, but show how you are as a person. I feel that your cars, and I've always said this, I always say you need to, I know you didn't create it, but you really should coin OEM Plus, because I don't really think it was really said as much before your videos. It really is a representation of you as a person as well, because you're, as much as you know, yeah, you're popular, let's just say it for the fact that you are, but you're modest and humble about it, and keeping those two virtues while still providing a positive contribution to, you know, social culture and showing how Japanese culture is, that in itself is what brings that merit to what you're doing.
Thank you. I mean, you know, it becomes self-evident on its own, You know, it's more like I, through my own actions and also through observation of others, like I just observe, and I can see that, you know, if somebody is like, if you look like an ass, then it doesn't do anything positive, like either for you or for other people. Like the only option really is like just to promote like positivity.
Mm-hmm.
Even if in the moment, like some hater comment or something gets really under your skin or something, right? Your reflexive action is to want to like snap back, right? Or mm-hmm. Let's say, of course, you know, it's easy to want to like, let's say, like show off or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like flex, as the kids say. But it doesn't really do very much. I mean, like the end, like when you really try to understand like what you do, and mm-hmm. that's kind of like something I spend a lot of time like trying to unpack like my choices, like what I've done, and I've done like a lot of things like I'm not proud of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you can kind of like look back on like those things that you did, and just like try to observe them as like a third person, but also then try to unpack like how that really, how it might have made like other person feel, you know.
Oh yeah. And,
you know,
self-reflection is a part of gaining wisdom, right?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. And you kind of brought it back to like that word that I was trying to look for, which is like, I think wisdom comes from experience. And, you know, it's easy to, or not as easy, but it's self-evident that humility just makes sense as an action, like a way to live. Because if you're like not humble, then people will just think you're a jackass. And mm-hmm. so,
right.
Like sometimes like I get confused. I'm like, am I choosing to like appear humble because like I can note like the self-serving kind of nature of it, because like being humble is a virtue that is good for you anyways. So you can just be humble and like capitalize on like the benefit of that,
mm-hmm.
like, versus like being not humble. Or is it like, am I really a humble person? Like, you know, I'm not sure. Like, if that makes sense.
It does. But I like to say that most people that don't have humble, well, what I believe is the opposite of humble is a vain attitude. They're very, like, vanity is something that unfortunately comes too natural to them.
Yep.
If they're not actually asking if they're humble, they don't know what being humble and modest is.
Yeah, I think, yeah, vanity is just a lack of self, like, you don't really know yourself. It's the ego is kind of like has taken control of
overbearing.
Yeah, you're kind of like ego driven and mm-hmm. excessively like narcissistic. Like a certain amount of that, I think is okay. It's like healthy. Otherwise, you would just be too shy to put yourself out there and do anything and like be on camera for like, you know, thousands of people to see, right?
Oh, yeah, but, yeah. It's a part of the formula of ambition, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's it's something you can learn too. I think it's something that you can learn, like everything. Can be learned. I think everything can be like studied, and then when you study it enough, when you study it with kind of like an open mind, then a lot of these things just kind of become like kind of obvious, like self-evident, like, oh, I shouldn't have, oh, okay, this way of living is better. And for me, you know, like just the idea of just like promoting positivity and just trying to be a positive person, be a positive influence, that I just find that has like benefits for my life. And then, so it creates like this self-fulfilling, this virtuous cycle of, you know, the more positive you are, you attract people who vibe with that. Mm-hmm. And then you just attract more positivity in your life. And the opposite is true.
Hands down. That's exactly what it is. And as you said, like, you have to have an open mind. If you're not open minded and you're just wearing blinders on both sides of your life, and you're thinking, oh, as you said, the clout is all that matters, to flex is all that matters, to have the better car than that person is all that matters, then yeah, you're not going to learn those virtues and those skills of being humble and modest. You have to be open-minded. You have to be able to listen and stuff, right? And as I said, yeah, it really comes through with how you even how you even say how to modify cars. I remember when you were speaking with Cap, and you were saying, you know, the best way to actually enjoy your car is to save up and then buy it, rather than, you know, if you don't have to get a loan, don't get a loan, because it's that much more fulfilling. And that comes from a humble and modest attitude. I think that's something that everyone should strive for in this car culture, because I don't think it's, I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that, you know, all with the people that you've demonstrated, to the friends you've made in Japan while, you know, exploring Japan's culture, car culture, food, people, whatever it may be, it's also been a representation of yourself as a person, that, you know, everything in its entirety is just kind of like that gift of you know, gaining these experiences. And it wouldn't have come through if you, let's just say, had that ego 100% of the time, 24/7, right?
Yeah. I mean, you definitely, like, the type of person that you are is a choice. And then, like, so it means, like, the type of person you choose to be, like, becomes who you are. And then that then gets, it kind of, like, manifests externally in, like, the type of person, the type of people that you become friends with, and, like, the type of relationships that you keep. And then within those relationships, what kind of actions you take, and then so how those relationships develop. So, like, for example, if you're kind of selfish, then you will only attract people who accept that level of selfishness from you. And usually people who are, like, who really have their shit together, they don't want to associate with people who don't, right? So it's like, if you want to be friends with, like, you know, a caliber of friends, of people who really have their shit together, then you need to have your own shit together. So then that gives you, like, an incentive to work towards that. Whereas if you just let yourself, you know, it's kind of like working out. You know, recently I've been really, really into getting back into shape and stuff, right?
Yeah. You're killing the pull-ups.
Yeah, man, they're hard, you know, but pull-ups are, like, one of the best exercises, right? It really engages almost your entire body.
Hands down.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, where was I going with that? I think, I don't know if you ever go down, like, the extreme end of, like, the opposite of, like, working out, where there's, like, a tacit acceptance of, like, being unhealthy. And it's just, like, there's, like, it's pure toxicity. So you go all the way down the spectrum, and you just find, like, pure toxicity and, like, self-hate, which manifests itself in, like, all these weird ways, one of which is, like, a justification of a state of being that is not optimal.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just really
depression.
Right. It's kind of like, you know, it's a mental illness. That's what it is, right? When you are, you know, in a suboptimal state of being that has a, you know, like, a profound impact on your life. Like, that's what a mental illness, like, really is. It's like a pattern of thought that's kind of, like, run amok and has just, like, you know, it's like a horse that's run off on its own. But you can rein it in and you can get your shit together. Like, I do believe almost everybody can start from like zero and like just work their ass off and become like a hero in their own life. Have you ever heard of the idea of the hero's journey?
No, actually, no. What is it?
So the hero's journey was this concept that was coined by this researcher named Joseph Campbell. And, you know, essentially, it's this structure which is found in almost pretty much all great stories across human culture, like from the earliest myths of like Homer, not the Simpsons, but from like the Greek, you know, Greek epics, all the way to like Star Wars and like Harry Potter. And it is basically this idea of, you should really look into it. It's very fascinating, but it's a structure of the journey that one goes through when they go from basically being like a loser, like being, you know, like an average, normal, like maybe not a loser, but just like just a normal Joe in the normal world. And then they choose to take upon themselves this journey. And the journey usually is like part internal, where they have to like beat their own internal demons. It often can have like a, you know, very external component where, you know, they literally go on like a journey to like another land or something. And if you look at all the stories, all the heroic stories that really resonate with people, you know, it always starts with normal dude who goes on a journey and then, you know, saves the girl, and then defeats the dragon, and then claims the loot, and then brings it back to his people, and then is remembered as a hero, the legacy of that hero. And I believe like that hero's journey it resonates so much with people because it's like the calling that we all have. It's like we all have like this potential to achieve great things, like whether like it's all relative, right? I mean, some people go on to become like presidents, you know, other people start YouTube channels. And I'm not discounting either as being like
lesser.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because who knows? I mean, like somebody who has a huge YouTube channel might reach a whole generation of like young people, right?
And exactly.
It really is like for YouTube in particular, like it's the frontier of our generation of media, right? I mean, like back in the day, people wrote books. Now they make YouTube videos. I mean, it's less simple than that. But I mean, like in terms of like the amount of people that can be impacted, like you can reach like, you know, like somebody who has like a million subscribers, if they put out a video that has like a million views, let's say it's like an hour long, right? I mean, in terms of like how many, you know, when you like, okay, let's say you open up like an ebook on Audible or something, right?
Yeah.
And like, let's say like the average book that you can write is, let's say like 100, 150 pages or something, right? So if you actually break that down into how many hours that is in an audiobook, it's like 4 hours or something. So that means if you create like 4 hours of content, it's basically like you wrote a book. Because if somebody consumes 4 hours of that content, right? So like, that's why I love like a podcast like this. Like let's like how many hours have we? Let me see how long we've been talking right now. So we have been talking for 55 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. If you were to transcribe all of that, that was basically like 75 pages of a book or something, or 80 pages or something. And if somebody listens to the whole thing, it's like almost like they read a book and they're able to, you know, to gain all that value from...
It's digested.
Yeah, yeah, from the amount of time and effort that would have taken to like, to read a book.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why like things like podcasts and like YouTube, they're so powerful. We shouldn't discount it, I think.
Not at all. Because as you just mentioned, I can personally attest to it because I'll be honest with you, not going to say too much of my job, but I drive for a living. A lot of the times whenever I listen to your podcast, or I even took the advice of listening to one of your favorite podcasters, Tim Ferriss, which he's amazing, actually. Yep. Like I've digested so much knowledge from your podcast, Tim Ferriss, some other podcasters being shared, and YouTube videos, so much more that I don't want to discredit even books, because there's just something about a skill of reading a book that it still holds true to this day.
But oh yeah,
it's just that much easier to digest, and it resonates that much more when you're watching a video or listening to a podcast.
Yeah. Like a good book, it's like a good whiskey. It's like finely distilled to like perfection, right? Where you take smooth. You're really, really taking that rough stone and polishing it into a diamond.
Yeah.
Whereas like a podcast like this, it's all off the cuff. Like we're just the raw thoughts, right? Which have value in and of themselves as well, I think. Because you know, you really get to see like how a person thinks and how they formulate their opinions and things like that, and what they you know, there's much less of a filter. Whereas with a book or like even an edited video, it's been distilled into exactly what you want it to be when you release it.
Yeah. No, you're right. There's podcasts are a lot more raw. If you I feel it. And this was another thing that was said in one of your videos. These things bring you a lot more closer with the people that you even admire too, because you kind of it humanizes them. It makes you think that, oh, he's just like he does have attributes like me, and that, I think that's what makes it a lot easier to digest.
Yeah, I think so too. And we're at the end of the day, I mean, like all of us, we're all just like human. So, yeah. And we all have the same 24 hours. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's why I get so inspired, you know, when I see people who are killing it. You know, I just see, like, I see their success and I'm like, we have the same 24 hours. It's just a matter of choice of how you choose to spend that time.
Yeah.
So you can just kind of like reverse engineer how that success was created. And then you can like apply those own principles to your life.
Oh yeah. With trying to gain those virtues of being modest and modesty and humility, as you mentioned earlier, because it all is definitely possible. There is a formula for it all. As you said, it can be reverse engineered. And I definitely see that you're showing it's an example of that it is possible, as well as even just a lot of your comrades in arms, Dustin Williams and Adam LZ, Samet, all those guys. They're definitely showing that, you know, anything is really possible as long as you stick to it. And we can even draw back to our original way that we met. Our discipline is really a discipline that you have to kind of formulate for yourself where it comes, and just what does that discipline represent? Does it represent positivity?
Positivity, discipline, humility, these traits. Like the way I try to think about it, right, is like I just want to be like, you know, growing up I only had like younger sisters. Mm-hmm. I never had like an older brother or like a younger brother. So, you know, what I try to do is like I try to be the older brother that I wish I had, and the older brother, I try to be the older brother to the young brother I wish I had. Like that's kind of how I try to think about it, and I try to present myself, and I find that holds me to like a certain standard, you know, because it is easy to be like it is easy to fall back on like those bad habits and like to be like not like a very nice person. There's mm-hmm. so many things that like that pull you towards negativity, but mm-hmm. you know, it is also something that becomes easier. And I'm by no means like a shiny beacon of light or something, but you know, I do feel like that it is something like positivity tends to beget positivity, right? So like for example, you know, like when a lot of people have been, you know, pointing out that I've been making, you know, a bunch of like great, like motivational posts lately, like on Instagram and stuff. You know, like half the time it's really to motivate myself. I'm just trying to hype myself up. And there's just a side benefit that I have the opportunity to kind of like lift other people up as well, which then fuels me because like, I'm like, oh great. Like that feels good too. So I think what I'm trying to say,
a bit symbiotic or even cyclical.
It's symbiotic, and it's like, it helps you too. Right. Mm-hmm. There's like, you just feel better. You just feel like you did something worthwhile with your time. You know, I guess, you know, it's a good segue to, because I don't know, I'm sure there's going to be some people listening to this. And, you know, there's this concept of like people who hate online, right? Like haters, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if it's like a natural human tendency. I think it kind of is to kind of like express the root of it. I think it's like jealousy in some sense, in some level, where
definitely is.
You know, like you attack the other person. Like when I've done it, whenever I've done it, when I try to unpack it, usually it's because of like some perceived shortcoming on my end that is like manifesting itself in an outward way, and I'm like attacking somebody who doesn't, like they may deserve it, or they may deserve it, but like it does nothing.
No benefits for either side.
Yeah, for either of us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, even if in that moment I feel like, oh yeah, I got him. Like if I were to like look back on it later, just like when I look back on myself, on the times when I did have like a yeah I got him moment, right? I'm like, man, that person who I really put down was probably not having like the best life. That's why they kind of you know, lashed out like that, and against their own like better judgment. And then I'm like, man, I was just an ass. Like that's what it was. Even if I was in a right in that moment. So
yeah, that's modesty playing through you right there, man. And As you said, no one's a beacon of light. Everyone has darkness with a light. But even just you saying that right there, and you know that you're going through moments of self-reflection, and you're literally saying, is it worth my time? Is it worth me? Like, am I losing a part of myself that I don't want to lose, which is a positive part of myself? Yeah, you're self-reflecting, and that's. I've done it too. Everyone's guilty of it. Jealousy is a natural human instinct. It's just that we also do have what you've said it already, choice. So you just have to sometimes just dial it back and think, what are you doing, right?
Right. And I think part of that too is like you said, like dial it back and do some self-reflection and just analyze, you know, like what's their value in that choice?
That's a good phrase.
Yeah.
Good phrase.
Yeah. And then... So let me explain what I'm doing right now. Okay. Why I suddenly became a little bit quiet, because this is requiring a lot of concentration.
Okay.
Now let me see if I can send you a picture on Instagram. Okay. And then you can explain, and then I can explain further, like what's happening right now.
Sure.
Okay. Take a look. I just sent you the picture on Instagram.
Okay.
Can you see? Hello. Okay, it looks like Jamal is connection's a bit weak. Let's hope he comes back. But for you folks who are still listening, I'm gonna turn around now and walk my way back. I'm actually walking. There's this little concrete barrier between these two rice fields. rice patties. Here we go. Okay,
you
back.
Could you hear me? Okay,
no,
yes.
I didn't hear anything after I sent the pictures.
Okay, so I'm back. So what you're doing right now is there's rice patties. And like literally the rice patties are hot lava for you right now because you're walking on some, I don't know, is that a walkway or is that a beam?
It's like a concrete barrier that's separating two rice patties from each other.
So that is, I can understand why it requires a lot of concentration because if you fall, that is very detrimental to your outfit and shoes and patties.
Got my nice new Balance shoes on, you know, the driving shoes. Oh, fuck.
Serenity now. Stay in the middle. Remember.
Yes. Yeah. It's literally the hot lava game. I don't know why I thought it'd be a good idea to walk down here. I just thought it'd be fun.
That's pretty cool, though. It looks beautiful, and the weather looks amazing.
Yeah. This is actually just behind my house. So there's, like, this really nice walking path behind my house, and it's really traditional-looking. You know, like rice fields? You know, like where they plant the rice by hand? Like, that's where I am, right? So it's like, oh, this is super cool.
And that's in Yokohama, right?
Yeah, it's in Yokohama. Okay. I mean, Yokohama's, like, a big area. And I live not, like, in the city, but it's kind of like, let's say like Tokyo is Toronto and Mississauga is Yokohama. Yeah. Then I would live kind of like in the really suburban area of Mississauga.
Sort of like 9th and Britannia.
So where?
Like 9th line in Britannia kind of area where it starts to trail off.
That's literally exactly where I lived in Mississauga. Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly there. Yes.
Yes. That's bigger. No, it's honestly beautiful there, man. Honestly, I was so upset that I couldn't come because I was looking so forward to it in the beginning of April. But
to come to Japan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you'll get here. You know, it's a matter of time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'll still get there. I just use that money to put more WRX and an ATR.
Yeah. And looping back to that, man, that's pretty awesome. What's it been like owning the GTR?
It's awesome. It's literally, like, I go upstairs into my garage sometimes. I just open the door, and I'm like, I actually really got it. Like, it's surreal because ever since back in when I was doing Kung Fu with you, I had my 240. Shortly after, because I was watching Initial D, I always thought, okay, I want a GTR. And I used to think about getting GTRs 10 years ago. And then after I had my 240 and I made it into a quote-unquote SIL 40 because I put the S13 projector lights and front end on it.
Nice.
And I put the red top SR20. I was thinking, okay, then I'm going to transition to GTR. It didn't happen. So I bought another 240, which was the S14. I did the same thing, put the S14 SR in there, did a little bit more work into it. And I'm like, okay, it's going to happen. I'm going to get a GTR after this because I'm just thinking, yeah, GTR. Again, it didn't happen. So then I felt like I actually transitioned through the Nissan hierarchy because then I got a 350Z after.
Yep.
And then I had that and I'm like, okay. And you know, it's funny, I could have got an R33 right then too, but it's sort of like the same thing with not coming to Japan. I saw two midnight purple R33s back then and they were like not even a fraction of what the cost is now.
Yeah.
And I had people saying, oh, but it's an old car. It's a 95. You're going to have to look for parts and all that. And it got into my head. And that's why I got the Zed, which wasn't a bad purchase, but it's still like, it wasn't what I really wanted.
Right.
So now having this car in my garage now, it just seems so surreal. And I feel like I finally fulfilled something inside me that said, you know, it doesn't matter what people think. Go for what you want. As long as you've done the research, you know this is something you truly want, you're acceptant of it, you know, because yeah, I'm gonna have to do maintenance on it right now, and I do have to actually do a few things on it, but it's still what I really wanted, and I'm just so overtly happy that I was able to fulfill it, even though it took 17 years.
No, hey man, that's amazing. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny. I feel like in many ways, you are more of a GDM guy than I am.
How so, man? You're literally in the land right now.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm here, but you've been, you know, you've been keeping the dream alive, even in Canada, from an earlier time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how old were you when you got your first 240?
16, with turning 17.
16, 17, right? Yeah, I mean, I didn't get my first car until I was like 22, and it was the Miata, right?
Yeah, I remember. I remember even you coming downstairs when I had my 240, and you guys were all like going around my car.
Going nuts, right? Yeah. Yeah, that's why it's really crazy, you know, just like this whole journey through JDM land. I guess I'm just happy I was able to, you know, get my dream car too, you know, the S2000. Like, whew,
man, I love that car, bro. I think that car is awesome. I've only been in one, and there was one here, and I'm not gonna lie, when I got inside it, especially because I felt it was just such a nice tight interior. Mm-hmm. I actually did think about getting one before I got my Zed, because my friend inspired me at getting one of those white ones with the red interior. It just looks so it looks so hot. It looks so sexy. Yes. I was just like, oh. It's an awesome car, man. And the way you've built it, as I said, like, I know you posted the other day about which one you prefer. And I think that was a spoon front end compared to your OEM plus kind of front end. Is that right?
Oh no, it was so the one yesterday, the post was AP2. So the second generation one versus mine.
That was the second generation one?
Yeah. Really? First generation. Yep. Yep.
Okay. I thought I could have sworn that would look like a body kit. Okay. Maybe I just didn't really recognize it. But there's just something more that looks so authentic of how your car looks. Like, I'm personally preferable on like a kind of what I like to call the Gran Turismo look, but a little bit more, you know, a little bit more classy. And I think that's what you've currently achieved. And you know what? Whatever you do is obviously going to be a more personal reflection of you on your cars. But I think that in itself is how I strive for with any of my cars. Because I never really had any flashiness to any of my cars. Like the 240 at the beginning, I only changed it to a silver front end just because I like the triple projectors.
Yeah.
And with my S14, I didn't do anything other than put a front lip and I found a set of GTR 32 rims at the time. So that's all I really did. I didn't want something too flashy. I like those undercover sleeper looks, and your car looks like that.
Aside from it being bright yellow.
That's the only thing, but honestly, that at least you'll never lose your car at night, you know. No, but definitely I honestly appreciate you even saying that I'm living the JDM life, because honestly, if I really think about it, and I said this in my actual podcast, I've been like really interested in Japanese culture ever since Dragon Ball, when I used to watch it as a 10-year-old late at night on YTV.
Yeah.
So like, it's always been a staple of my life. And just as you mentioned early in the conversation, that whole level of respect has also been something I've been always striving for with any of my friendships or anything that I've tried to demonstrate some sort of positivity in life. So I feel that, like, Japanese culture, yes, it has been a very big staple in my life. My girlfriend will attest to that. She's just like, oh, Japanese, you know, Jamal's gonna go crazy about it. So I think it's definitely led to a positive merit in my life, and obviously yours.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've been here for since 2010, so 11 years now, closing in on 11 years. Insane.
I think you've gotten the most ultimate, and I hope I can say it here. I hope I don't infringe on any of your privacy here, but I think you've gained the most ultimate of JDM. I guess you could say milestones. Now that you're engaged. Uh-huh. Congrats again, bro.
Dude, thank you. Thank you so much. I mean, I haven't even made it official, like made an official post or, you know, any silliness like that. But yeah, thank you. I mean, I did kind of hint it in that one post.
Yeah.
Dude, thank you. I mean, it's pretty mind blowing for me. Like, it's like the, you know, it's like season two. That's season two.
you're in Albo Shimpudin.
Yeah.
You progress from the regular Albo to Albo Shippuden the next season.
No, that makes more sense. That's a more fitting analogy. I think you know, stage one was when I was still in Gunma, and the stage, you know, initial D stage two was when I came here to Yokohama, and now this is going to be the Shippuden version. Yep.
Yeah, definitely. Honestly, and I'm very happy for you, man. I just have to hold off on showing my girl because she's gonna want me to go get the ring instantly.
Yeah,
that's good, man. That's good, honestly. And honestly, man, it just all in all, like, it's just been great, even just catching up with you. I didn't even realize the time went by so fast, but like, it was just, it's been great just catching up with you and just talking about life in general, because and that's the great thing. I hope people even learn from you that you're not just cars, you're more than that.
Yeah, I'm much weirder than the cool image I try to portray unsuccessfully on YouTube. Yep.
As I said, I don't think you give yourself enough credit.
Yeah, forgive my self-defacing nature.
It's all good, man. It's all good. But yeah, man, it is actually 3 o'clock in the morning, and I think I'm going to have to get some sleep.
Oh, wow. Okay. So nice. I win this one. I outlasted you, even though at the beginning I was like, I only got 20 minutes. And we went for an 80-minute podcast.
We'll definitely do it again, man, honestly, because I just enjoy speaking with you, man. I found that as I've heard more of your podcasts and just hear you speak more often, you have definitely gained a lot more knowledge since Kung Fu Days, hands down.
Like, in which sense? You mean, like, because if it's in cars, I don't think so.
In every aspect of life, whether it's just leisure activities, which is cars, for one of them, just wisdom in terms of, as you even mentioned, that you're trying to sort of be a big brother to, like, when you're talking to people. I can even see it when you're talking with Masa, but at the same time, you still hold a level of respect to say that, yeah, I'm trying to be like, pass on my wisdom, but I can learn things from you too, kind of thing. And I think that's a very key and defining attribute that you have, that you try to provide knowledge, but you're also very willing and open to learn from anyone.
Well, thank you, man. Thanks for making that observation. Hopefully, like, some of those positive traits kind of inspire, you know, other folks, especially younger folks, to you know, choose positivity, I guess. You know, just choose positivity, chase your dreams, do what you love, and don't stop even when it gets hard. And yeah, you're going to look back and be like, wow, I can't believe I accomplished that.
Yeah, hands down. Let's try to do what we can to leave our stamp in the world, right?
Awesome. And that's, I think, just the perfect place to end this podcast, man.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Let's do part two on your podcast. I think I can't do it right now because it's 3 a.m. over there, and I should probably like, get ready to hop onto my next meetings.
No worries.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for making the time.
No problem, bro. You take care and stay safe.
You too, man. Catch
up. All right. Take care, man.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Welcome back. So I really hope you enjoyed that podcast with Jamal. It was a lot of fun, and it's always good to catch up with friends, old friends from back in the day. I wish him the best on his journey, and I can't wait to have him on again on the podcast. So hope you guys enjoyed this, and I'll let you go pretty quick today. Let me think. Are there any other announcements, any things I want to talk about? So, okay. I am actually releasing a new product very soon. So I'm going to be doing pre-orders for this product. It's a reverse leather-backed steering wheel, 330 millimeters, with a Albo Racing horn button. So that's going to be, you know, my first real physical product for your car. And I'm very excited about it because it is super high quality. I'm actually working with his company to produce these goods, which produces goods for other very, very big tuning brands and companies, which you all know about. So keep an eye out on that on the hunters.com site, and also on Instagram and on YouTube when I start promoting it and building up the hype for it. But aside from that, I'm going to let you guys go early today. I need to head off to my next thing. So I just want to wish you a great day, a great life, and I'll see you in the next one.